Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Vinny and Haney on your home for sports. 105.7 The Fan.
And pitches. And there's another fly ball. Looks like the one he hit in the first inning. And it's gone. So Cedric Mullins has hit two home runs. The payoff pitch of the runner's going. Line drive and a base hit in the left field through the hole on the left side. A clutch two-out hit by Rutschman.
Beautiful piece of hitting. That's Adley Rutschman. So been encouraging the last few days of kind of his at-bats, and I know that felt good for him. He had a big smile on his face because that's the Adley Rutschman we know. Really good change-ups, and you need it with that left-hand hitting lineup. And a team that he had just faced not that long ago and pitched really well against, you know that they were going to make adjustments. He threw a ton of four-seam fastballs up against them the last time. I'm happy with our offense. We didn't push quite enough across, but I thought we were doing a better job of keeping the line moving, taking walks, and making those big hits are going to start coming a little bit more often.
I was able to put some really good swings on the ball today. Really huge boost for the morale in the clubhouse. Soares did an amazing job out there, you know, keeping them in check, and Adley with a big knock.
All right, Biddy at 80-105.7 The Fan. What's happening, everybody, here on this Woman Crush Wednesday? How about them Orioles? Yesterday, we're ragging on them. They'll be lucky to win anything in the postseason. Now today, they're a half game out of first place. The ebbs and flows of September baseball. The ebbs and flows of two mediocre teams at the top of the division as the Yankees get shut out last night by Kansas City, which we'll get to. But here's two key things about what happened last night at Fenway Park. One, the Orioles got out to the lead and maintained it. Didn't score one and then give up a run in the bottom of the first like we saw with Kay Povich a couple of nights ago as Mullins goes deep twice. And I'm going to sit here and I'm going to say I'm sorry to Cedric Mullins, because we go back to May, June. I was ragging on
Stoast. I think everybody was.
Stoast, done. Hadn't hit for over a year. This isn't a small sample size. It's a large sample size, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Who cares that he makes these spectacular plays looking like a young Bob Haney out in center field? Can't hit consistently enough for me. Of course, the world revolves around me. And now here he is. It's gotten hot. Now I'm probably jinxing him, Nolan. I might want to start piping down a little bit. He's been outstanding as of late. And he moved into the two-hole prior to last night's opener against Boston. And he knew nothing then, except for that great catch. Two homers last night, won a pesky pole job, just kept drifting and drifting. Or I thought Abreu was going to catch it before he got to the warning track, and then before you know it, it lands in some woman's purse.
I think the pitcher, he thought it was a pop-up.
Yeah, and a pesky pole, man. Yeah. The nuances of Fenway Park. And then he hits a missile for his second home run. Adley Rutschman, he gets a big hit opposite field with bases loaded. Nobody out. So the Orioles put up crooked numbers, finally. Not by a ton, but enough. 5-1. Bullpen got a little dicey there late.
Yeah.
Cano balked in a run. Dominguez gave up a hit, so the tying run came into the plate, but he got out of it. But Cedric Mullins, I'm sorry for questioning you, because if you look at the Orioles lineup right now, it's Gunner. Santander has been a consistent run producer. And Mullins has been one of their more reliable hitters. Small sample size to go back to that. But still, as we're in approaching middle of September, he's a guy that I actually feel a little bit better about when he gets to the plate. And we know the glove play. He doesn't have a great arm. is what it is. But Cedric Mullins was the offensive hero yesterday. It was good to see Adley Rutschman get that base hit, because this is a guy that's been struggling offensively for the better part of 2.5 months. So he gets that knock. So the Orioles get the win 5-3. And as we said, the Yankees lose 5-0 at home. But we heard from Brent and I talking about that clutch hit from Adley. This is a guy that was an all-star catcher in the first half of the season by merit, not by popularity contest. Nolan, get in here. This is not, he wasn't the most popular guy. He was the starting catcher in the all-star game this year because he deserved to be the starting catcher in the all-star game. Now, if you're doing a second half all-star vote, he doesn't deserve any of those. But to get him hot, hopefully, along with Mullins, and then trying to stem the tide till Westbrook comes back, and yeah, he's throwing, he's gripping, and doesn't seem as though it's going to be imminent, his return to the lineup. Adley Rutschman returning to first half Adley, going to be huge for Brandon Hyde down the stretch here.
And notice what type of hit it was. It wasn't a monster, no-doubter homer, a double off the wall, or anything like that. It's just a single. Going the other way. Don't even think it got off the ground. I mean, it was a worm burner that just finds a way through. That's what we've been talking about. That it seems like the mentality of the lineup when they were struggling was that every time someone came up to the plate with runners in scoring position, I got to hit a home run. I got to have the big swing right here that seals the game and puts us over the top. And in that situation, all right, you're leading. It's 3-1. Suarez was dominant. You feel okay about some of your bullpen arms as of late, but just have a feeling that three runs wasn't going to cut it. And I just love that he came through there, especially with two outs in that situation. You know, a week ago, that was almost a guarantee for a strikeout. Or
a double play.
Right, a weak grounder there or something. So, love to see that. Earlier in the game, I love the at-bats from Mullins. The second home run, he worked the count, started making that pitcher, Crawford, actually pitch, because through the first inning and the second inning, there was just, you know, swinging at the first pitch, easy outs, low pitch count. And then Gunner works the walk. Again, there's another example, two outs. Mullins hits the home run.
Yeah.
So they're starting to string together some quality at-bats. It's not just one guy with a good at-bat and then the next two guys strike out. They're starting to get some momentum going here.
And it's only one game. Let's not forget they scored three runs a couple of nights ago. But Gunnar Henderson back in the leadoff spot. He gets on base. He scored two runs last night. You talk about the walk. He also had the hit. So Gunnar at the leadoff spot has been good things for Baltimore throughout the course of the season. But Suarez bounced back after that brutal outing, his last performance, and they needed him to be big. Dean Kramer's on the hill tonight, and it looks as though, and by the way, style points, 107 off the bat, 114 exit velo. That's great. It makes the nerds happy. Hey, but little dribblers or worm burners, as Nolan said, through the right side or left side, and you get two runs home, that's all that matters. And all of a sudden, and I still think they're debatable as a possible world championship team, and nobody wants them to win a World Series more than me, because I want Nolan to experience it, as I said yesterday. But in this day in baseball, nothing's going to surprise you in the postseason. And if they continue to go the way they're going, or average, they'll get in the playoffs. And then all bets are off once you get to October. And maybe they'll be healthier than they've been all season long. The Yankees just cannot seem to seize control of the division. As they lost last, they got shut out. Lugo was brilliant for Seth Lugo for the Royals. So this is a division that it seems nobody really wants to win. Somebody's going to win it. And in all likelihood, whoever wins it might be the number one seed in the American League playoffs here. So today, 24 hours after we thought they were going to be in trouble, and they still may be, now they're a half. We could come here tomorrow morning, and they'd be in first place by a half a game. So it really looks like it's trending to that series in the Bronx deciding who wins the division.
Well, we're down to 16 games. So probably so, Bob, because the two teams have had longer losing streaks than winning streaks. I say that.
Orioles have had one three-game winning streak since the All-Star break. And the All-Star break, according to my math, was almost 2 months ago. But they won last night, so they're a half game out of first. Thank you, Kansas City. The Royals are still chasing Cleveland for the AFC or the AFC, the American League Central Division Championship. Who knows? Kansas City gets hot. They could be the number one seed before it's all said and done. So only 16 games left, but that's a lot of baseball in determining the standings in both the divisions and the wild card. You want to talk about the Orioles and Cedric Mullins bust out game last night? Feel free to do so. First time he's had a multi-homer game since 2021. And Albert Suarez was outstanding. We'll see if Dean Kramer can follow up his brilliant performance last Friday as the Orioles look to win the series. Then they get a day off. Then they go to Detroit. They won last night. Tigers are still three games out of the wild card. So this is all to be determined. But still, it's September baseball. It's fun. The Orioles are in it for the third straight year in the final month of the season. And that's all you can ask for, I guess, as a baseball fan. Now, as an NFL fan, the Ravens, they're back on the field today practicing, getting ready for the Raiders. 9.5-point favorites. 9.5-point favorites against Las Vegas. And they got they didn't get trounced by the Chargers. They got kind of dominated, ran over in the second half.
They got ran over, yeah. Like they wore out in the second half. The Chargers and Greg Roman did what they do, what Jim Harbaugh does. He wants to run the football. Well, just like he did at Penn State, remember, Bob? 32 straight runs in the second half. So they want to run the football in the second half, and that's what they did against the Raiders. And the Raiders couldn't run it, and they couldn't stop the run. Two very, very bad things. So if that can continue, you know, so be it. This is really the Raiders' first, because that was like a home game for the Raiders last week at the Chargers. This is their first right. Where the crowd is not going to be all Raider fans. This is, you know, Ravens crowd. And if I can see this being a much bigger Derrick Henry game. And I'll bet this, Bob, I'll bet this, that Lamar, see, I think it was about Thursday night, first game of the season, playing against the Chiefs. I mean, he was playing it like a playoff game, Bob. Playing it like a playoff game. All the runs that he did, taking off and running, trying to run over people. I think we see somewhat of a different Lamar this week, especially if he's got time to throw. I think last week was like, screw it, man. I'm not going to do that. But I think, in the O-line, we'll see if they're just a little bit better this week than they were last week, especially run blocking. You kind of feel bad for Henry.
And we'll get to the film study, looking back at last Thursday's loss to the Chiefs coming up at 11 o'clock. Maryland AD Damon Evans, he'll be joining us at 10:30. Terps lose at home to Michigan State. Go to Virginia and also talk about what's going on down in College Park throughout the athletic program. But real quick, with Lamar, didn't practice Monday. If he's not there today, and we'll know later on this afternoon, because we're not worrying now, but if he's not there today, then maybe I'm assuming maybe. There's more to the equation here.
Yeah, but he was there at the pitchers and all
right,
that.
Right, and he was engaged in social media.
I read, who was it? One of those guys just put out that he was sore. That's why he didn't. And, I mean, if you ran it 16 times, you know, you carried it more than anybody. He rightfully is sore, especially with his, he's probably saying, damn, wish I had those 20 pounds back.
Yeah, but like you said, if he was banged up and it was an injury concern, he wouldn't have been out there posing for pictures and messing around with the masses out there on social media. It's Woman Crush Wednesday. Anything you want to hear, favorite female artist or band, get in here at 410-583-1057. Plaza Sports text line. Nolan's waiting for you. Come back, take your phone calls. As we said, Damon Evans will be joining us bottom of the hour. And then we'll look back at the Kansas City game, not to dissect the final play. Or maybe we will. Stay tuned. Film Study 11.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Hey,
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, three-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
10 o'clock. I'm at the mercy of whoever prints those stupid bleeping things. But anyway, that's what we're talking about. Woman Crush Wednesday. Damon Evans talking Maryland sports with us. Bottom of the hour. Terps at Virginia. Saturday night, 8 o'clock. You can hear the game on the Fan. Maryland dropping 2.5 against the Cavs, who, by the way, are 2-0. One at Wake Forest. Maryland was 9.5 point favorites at home and lost to Michigan State. But let's get out to the phones. Orioles win last night. Ravens at home against the Raiders. Harry in Owings Mills. Harry, what's happening?
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. Are you ready today? Can you hear me okay?
Oh, yeah, you're good. You. Come on, Harry, bring it.
Fantastic. Okay. You talked about Adley Rushman. Let's have a great conversation about that, because let's not get too excited too quickly, because consistency is key. And let me explain what I mean. Last year, the Orioles, if memory serves me correctly, they were the best at hitting with runners in scoring position.
Correct.
Right. And I take a look at Adley Rushman's two last at-bats in the seventh inning and the ninth inning, and I see an inherent problem with the philosophy of the Orioles' approach, because that's the difference. So you take a look in the seventh inning, Adley Rushman, bases loaded, two outs, a two-strike count. And what you're supposed to do is you hit the ball where it's pitched. If they throw it on the outer half, you want to hit it to the back half of the field, which is what he did in that at bat. Okay, if you try to pull a pitch on the outer half, you're only going to roll over on it and hit it to, and with your left hand, and hit it to the right side for an easy out. Let's go to the ninth inning. We had first and second with two outs. The count was 1-1. The pitcher threw a breaking ball on the outer half where, in my opinion, it was an easier pitch for him to hit to the back half of the field, because it was a breaking ball, it was slower, and it was waist high. You could see it better. But he tried to pull it, and it was an easy rollover to first base, which was the wrong philosophy. He should have used the same philosophy he used in his approach in the seventh inning. And if the Orioles – and another – Colton Cowser is famous for this. He does the same exact thing. You throw the ball lower on the outer half, he tries to pull it, and he rolls over on it. When you got to bend your knees and get your nose down on it to drive the ball, if you're going to do that, to try to pull it or hit it on the back half. If you remember the one with Jackson Holliday, had the bases loaded in the game. I can't remember who we were playing, Cleveland or what. I think it was whoever we were playing. But he bent his knees, he got his nose down on it, and he picked the ball up. I think it was Cleveland, and he drove the ball up to center field. If the ball is pitched on the inside, you pull it. If it's pitched in the middle, you look up the middle. If it's pitched on the outer half, you drive the ball to the opposite field. You always take a look at that, and you want to make sure you put yourself in the best hitting situation possible. So what Adley Rushman did, in my opinion, that was a mistake, was that instead of him allowing the pitch location to dictate his swing, he allowed the count, because it was 1-1, to dictate a swing. And therein lie, he made a mistake. And if the Orioles don't change that, we're going to be sent home early in the playoffs, because we know we're going to make the playoffs, at least the wild card, and we still have an opportunity to win the division. So if you have any comments on that, I would love to hear that. And I have one more thing.
Yeah, real quick.
Okay. In your opinion, because Albert Suarez had been fantastic all season long, did he take a look against the White Sox and say, well, you know what, Cade Povich has struggled all year long. He had a fantastic game against the White Sox. All I got to just really do is show up. I don't have to really focus like I have in the other games. And he got lambasted in that game.
All right, well, thank you, Harry. The other team tries, too,
yeah,
every now and again. And it just wasn't his night. He got lit up. And did the Orioles go out going for the sweep, thinking they were going to roll through them? Possibly. The offense didn't really do him any favors that day as well, but the fact that he bounced back nicely and shut down Boston for most of the night, I think speaks volumes about Albert Suarez, who, by the way, has been, you know, if I still had an Orioles MVP vote, whoever decides to do that took it away from me 2 years ago, had it for 15, 20 years, I would seriously consider throwing him in the three hole.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Gunnar's going to be the MVP. Then
you can get there.
Santan there. And Burns, he was kind of strong, but Suarez? I mean, it just, I mean, there are options there. Westberg certainly would have been part of the equation. But Adley's been bad for 2 months. And I'm not going to sit here Rod Carew style and dissect his at bat because he drove in two key runs, as you saw, turned out to be two huge runs because Boston scored to cut it to 5-3 and had the tying run at the plate. Harry, we love you. Appreciate the call. And that was really good analysis. But it's September, dude. Take them wins.
Now, with Suarez,
take the wins.
With Suarez, Bob, I mean, you look at all the other guys. The other guys had high expectations, MVP voting. With Suarez, where would they be without him?
That's exactly my point, Vinny. Yep. That's why you're putting him in the MVP conversation, because most people didn't even know who he was until he made his debut with the Orioles back early in the season. It's Vinny at 81.057. The Fan will come back. Damon Evans is going to be joining us. Maryland Athletic Director. Yeah, disappointing loss to Michigan State, but you move on to UVA. Big win, or big game, in my humble opinion. Also talk about what else is happening there athletically. College Park trying to generate some dough, keep these athletic programs relevant in the Big Ten. Athletic Director, University of Maryland, joins us every Wednesday. Let's welcome back to the show Damon Evans. Damon, good morning.
Good morning, fellas. How you doing?
Doing all right. Wish we'd be talking about the Terps being 2-0, but reality is what it is. Frustrating loss, to say the least, this past Saturday down at College Park against Michigan State. And when you Maryland loses the game, point spreads aside, Maryland was favored to win it. You're looking at 2-0 and then to fall short. What's the regrouping process, the resetting process like in the ensuing days after it, looking at Virginia this Saturday?
First and foremost, we have to evaluate the film and learn from the mistakes that we made. I think we left a lot out on the field, and I think Coach Locks would tell you that. That was a team who you have to give credit to. They beat us, but I will say this, that's a team that I felt that we should have beaten. I think we're a talented of enough team to beat Michigan State, but again, you have to give them credit. But I know that Coach Locks is disappointed, as we all are, because our expectations are high here. We want to win, and I want the fans to know that. But at the same time, I don't want anyone to think that we're not working hard here to get it done. Coach Locks is working hard. We'll regroup this week and get ready for Virginia. We can't take any of these games lightly. I think, as you know, with this new era of college football, you can't go in just automatically thinking, well, this team, they got new people and all of this. The transfer portal has created some parity. But again, no excuses for us. It's a game that I felt that we should have won. We'll go back to the drawing board, learn from our mistakes, and move on to Virginia.
And Virginia, it's an ACC reunion, if you will. The Terps, of course, were one of the charter members of the Atlantic Coast Conference. And Saturday night, ACC Network, and he's still, I mean, Mike Locksley was around when he was with Ralph, when Maryland was still in the Atlantic Coast Conference. Does that still resonate a little bit, Damon, the ACC vibe that Maryland, it's ACC's in Maryland's blood. Is this something that still might resonate a little bit with the program here?
Absolutely, it resonates with the program. When you are a founding member of a conference and you've played Virginia on numerous occasions, you can think back to some of the rematches, and we want to take care of business. We left the ACC to move to the Big Ten, and we want to go and flex our muscle against UVA. And this game is important. This is a bounce-back game. You know, we've had some times in the past where we lose a game and then we'd follow up with another loss. This is going to show us what we're made of, what type of team we are, and show how we can respond. So I'm looking forward to the challenge. I'm actually glad we're going on the road to play UVA, because we need to show that we can respond to adversity, and we faced a lot of adversity in losing that game this past weekend.
Hey, Damon, the thing that pissed me off the most about that game, I mean, a mental error right before the half. The dude's kicking a 55-yarder. You know, and it's impossible for him to basically make that kick. And then you jump off sides. I mean, you know, the dumb things, you know, that kids do at times. And then they get the 50-yarder right before the half. And then, you know, then they got some momentum going in. I mean, that one bothered me more than anything.
That was a turning point in the game. I was sitting up watching the game. I said, that's going to be significant moving forward. I mean, Yeah, you know, sometimes you look at 55 yards, that's a big difference between 55 and 50 yards when you're trying to kick a field goal. And that proved to be bad for us. And so, again, as I say, you know, we got to learn from the mistakes that we make, and Lox will have this team ready. I have confidence in him, have confidence in our players to regroup. But I do know this. We are not a team that can make mistakes like that. We are not a team yet that can overcome those types of things. And more importantly, let's not put ourselves in a position to where we're even having to talk about those types of situations. So we got to be solid. We got to be fundamentally sound. We got to take care of our assignments. And we have to be disciplined. And my expectations is that Lox will get that corrected. And as I said before, I believe in this team. I believe in Lox, and we'll continue to move forward.
Damon, you know what? The other thing is, I mean, especially you, you're sitting up there, and how many closeout chances did they have? You know, the 41-yard field. I mean, they had a number of chances. Edwards interception. The game's over if they just do that. You know, I mean, that's what gets so frustrating because, all right, tight game. But you know what? We found a way to win it at home at the end.
Well, you know, you're actually right. It's interesting. If you take a look at that game closely, which I do, we give them the field goal because we jump off sides. That's 3 points. We miss a field goal. That's 3 points. So that's 6 points right there, swing, you know. And then you talk about when we get down close and we're about to be in field goal range again, and unfortunately we have the pick. So you're talking about potential 9-point swing there, and this game should be in our hands and be over with. And it just, you know, after you lose a game like that, you're sitting there wondering, how did that happen?
Yep.
I will tell you, the thing that I take away from it, I try to take away some positives from a loss, and there aren't very many that you can take away when you lose because I hate to lose. But I do know this. That's a game that we should have won. That's a game that we've shown who we are. We can score. But we've also shown the fact that we can't overcome these mistakes. So what I say in my mind is this. Let's clean these things up, and let's stay on track. And if we can do that, which I believe we can, we should be fine moving forward.
Damon Evans, Athletic Director, University of Maryland. Terps taking on Virginia in college football. I think we've established Maryland should have won against Michigan State.
I think we've
got that one figured out. Now you got to take care of business against the Cavaliers. But let's move forward. Kevin Willard's basketball program. I know you can't talk about the young man because he hasn't signed yet. But big old commit for Willard, Baltimore native, coming in the class of 2025. As we're, 2 months away from tip-off in both basketball men and women here.
I'm excited about basketball season, obviously. Last year, I know it stings for a lot of people in men's basketball because we didn't make the tournament. I want people to know that that is an expectation here to make the tournament. The real expectation is how far of a run we can make in the tournament. And so I want to make that clear, and we need to get back on track. But it starts with recruiting. I think, you know, this past weekend was a good sign for us. I like what we brought in on this current team through the portal and the recruits that we brought in. So I like how we're positioning ourselves and the kids that we're going after and how the team is working each and every day. Same on the women's basketball side. You know, we made the tournament last year but did not do typical women's basketball things as far as making our run in the tournament, but Brenda has regrouped as well, and I feel good about that. It's interesting, you know, sports can take you on this roller coaster ride, and you have these ups and downs, but I'm confident with who we have in place and what we're doing, and we just need the fans to stay on board and continue to support, and we'll do the right things and make everyone proud.
Damon, speaking of the fans, you know, I mean, that's more so, that's what's a big killer, you know, in that Michigan State game. Because, I mean, you see these great, watching TV like Bob and I do on Saturdays all day long, you see these great environments out there. Then when, you know, at 3:30 we put the Terps game on and it's like, they got to show that side of the field because it's empty. You know what I mean? And then now if you when you lose a home game, kind of the fans, they don't get as excited and they don't show up. And just the college atmosphere on that day, you know, that's the only thing that is bothersome, you know, now.
It is. It's tough, and I have to thank our fans that do come out and support. I never want to say we don't have good fans, because we do have good fans, and we've got some loyal, very consistent fans. Now, is it where we want to be? No. Of course, we'd love to sell out the stadium, but I know our fans' expectations too. We've got to win, and that's just the nature of the fan base around here. There are some schools where they don't have to win, and the fans are still going to show up. And so understanding who our fan base is, I want them to know that I do appreciate them. I do appreciate their passion, even when I get some of the emails and texts that aren't so nice. And, you know, my thing, that's just fans showing their passion, and they want us to do well. And so I will always encourage them to come out, because it's not about me. It's not about Locks. It's about the young men that are on the field who are representing this institution. And I can tell you, fans mean so much to our student athletes. But I'm also going to say this. We need to take care of business when we do have a good turnout, so fans want to come back and they don't say same old Maryland again. I don't believe this is the same old Maryland. If I go back and take a look at these past 3 years, I think I may be off here. I think it's in a 20-year period to win three straight bowl games. I think it might be our best stretch in that vein. And I think it's the first time ever that we won three straight bowl games. And I hear people, you know, saying, oh, we got this, that. I want to win. I want to beat Oregon, and I want to beat USC, and I want to beat the teams we're supposed to beat, and I want to beat Ohio State. And you know what? We're going to keep pushing and working hard to beat them, but I know our fans deserve that, and we need to give that to them.
Damon Evans, Athletic Director, University of Maryland. Damon, it's Woman Crush Wednesday. What song you want to hear?
You know what? I'm going to go with American Heart by Faith Hill. American Heart by Faith Hill. And I want to say this, you know, this today is a day of remembrance, you guys. September 11th and what happened 23 years ago is a huge tragedy. So I just want to say to all the families that were adversely impacted in our nation, we're thinking about you. We appreciate our armed services and the people who protect our country, because that was a significant thing that happened in our history, and I'm grateful that we have people who are looking over us.
Damon, always appreciate the time. We'll get that song for you for sure. Good luck in Charlottesville. We'll talk to you next week.
Good luck, Damon.
Thanks, guys.
Yep. Damon Evans, everybody. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. We'll come back reset for you. Vinny's film breakdown of the Steelers. Freudian slip. We'll get that coming your way at 11:30. Ravens lost to Kansas City. Good and bad. Stay tuned. Bob Haney, Vinny Serrato. 9/11, of course, 23 years after the most catastrophic day, arguably, in the history of this country. I was on the air at WNST with Jeremy Kahn. And I was only there because Spiro Maricas had a dentist appointment. And he asked me to come in early. And I said, sure. And then management, not Nestor, decided to take a TV out of the studio. So I didn't even have a television in the studio, because who was in charge at the time didn't want us goofing off, you know, watching SportsCenter while we're doing a sports talk show. Like stupid micromanaging nonsense. So the TV was in the producer's room where Jeremy was. And we didn't have all the fancy equipment here. He had to write a Joe Blows on line one on a post-it note, stamp it on the glass. And the Ravens were playing Minnesota that coming Monday, week two. And Monday Night Football was Denver and the Giants to start the season. And everyone was whining because the Ravens didn't get the Monday Night Football game as defending Super Bowl champs. So I'm sitting there, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. So Jeremy puts a post-it note up on the glass. Plane hits World Trade Center, chaos in New York, or something like that. And I'm looking at it. I'm like, okay. And I didn't say anything on the air. I just continued with the call. We got boned, man. NFL hates us, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. So I go to a break, and I walk in. I'm like, what the hell's going on in here? And they had the TV in there, and then you could see that everything was, and it just escalated from there. The second plane hadn't hit yet. And then I said over the air that, you know, this is what's going down, really not knowing what the hell was going down. Like, planes are crashing into World Trade Centers. I have no idea what this is. And obviously, as the morning turned into afternoon, and then the Pentagon and up in Pennsylvania, So it's a day I'll never forget, would like to forget, but you can't because it's real. But yeah, I was on the air, and it was a memorable day for all the wrong reasons. September 11th, 2001.
I was in Chicago. I was at the gym, and the owner of the gym, it was a small gym, and he called me in there. He says, look at this. It was a small little TV. He said, look at this. And I said, you know, and it was like, whoa, you know. And then the next one hit when we were standing there watching, and my sister-in-law, one was in New York, one was downtown Chicago. And, you know, so what I did was because they said another plane was headed towards, I jogged down to where she was to see, you know, if she was okay. And then my cousin, she was in one of the towers and she got on the boat to get across, to get out. So, yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah. It was 23 years later, Vinny.
Yeah.
And Nolan, you were just a young kid at the time. You and my daughter are about the same age. Oh, by the way, prayers to my daughter, Kaylin, getting surgery today. Mm-hmm. Nothing of the life-saving, but still necessary. Kaylin, love you. But it was unbelievable. It's like I was watching a movie. It wasn't real to me.
Yeah.
And I remember driving from NST because Nestor came in and then Bruce Cunningham came in and I got my car. And I'm on 695 and nobody was speeding. There wasn't a lot of traffic because schools were closed. I guess people had left work. It was a surreal day that was very real, unfortunately, to a few thousand people who lost loved ones. And it just a horrible, horrible, horrible day.
Yeah, and especially like all the new, like my father-in-law, their neighbors were, you know, they had so many people, you know, because people in Jersey, they all go into New York to work. So that was tough. And Bob, to me, one of the coolest things after was when Bush, and you know, with the Yankees, wore the jacket and came out to throw the first pitch and stuff. I mean,
from the mound.
Yeah, that was
down the middle.
Yeah,
on the fly.
But I mean, that gave you goosebumps and stuff watching. I mean, that was
because sports were shut down.
Everything was shut down,
and it was just wow. A horrible, horrible day, but we paid tribute to those who lost their lives on that horrific day 23 years ago.
You know who did? You know, Adam Schefter's wife, his wife now, Adam Schefter's wife, husband was a fireman, and he got killed in 9/11, and that's now Adam Schefter's wife.
So a terrible, terrible day, and I'm sure a lot of people listening were affected. I know there were some Baltimore people who were there on 9/11 in the Twin Towers. And, you know, it united us as a country. I don't want to get political. Here we are 23 years later, and I don't feel united anymore. But anyway, we're going
to... Have you ever been down there to...
I have not. Last time I was in New York, I saw Maryland play UConn. That was 2015 at Madison Square Garden. I don't think the Freedom Tower, was built yet. I can't remember.
Have you been there, Norm, to the Freedom Tower?
No, we did go to the field in Pennsylvania where the plane finally.
We
the
did
last
go
one
through one
crashed.
Of the firehouses where the first responders were there and their certain tributes. But when we come back, we're going to look at film. We're going to talk about the Ravens as they're trying to bounce back from that opening night loss to Kansas City. Raiders coming to town, so we'll get into that with film study. Talk about the offense first. We'll do defense later. Whip around 11:15. AFC North report. Jerry Dulac talking Steelers. Joe Dannemann, Bengals. Zach Jackson talking Browns here on The Fan.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.